Hello, everyone. Welcome back to I See What You're Saying, the Disciplined Listening Podcast. I'm Michael Reddington, and today it is my pleasure to welcome our next guest, Sarah Downing. Sarah is a senior director of corporate marketing with a long track record of success in both business development and marketing in the construction industry, where she has won multiple awards, is often requested to facilitate presentations at conferences, and is a frequently quoted resource. And today, I am excited to dive into our conversation and share her thoughts, expertise, and experiences in lots of directions, including how did she earn her success as a woman in a field that's largely dominated by men? The power of curiosity in asking great questions, the thought process of building confidence through listening, and how she transitioned from somebody who frequently sought out mentors to somebody who is now frequently sought out as a mentor. It's a great conversation. I'm really excited to share it with everybody, and thank you all so much for taking the time to listen today. Before we get started, I do want to thank our sponsors. First, we have Humantel. If you haven't already, please head over to humantel.com, and that's where you can learn all you need to about their online self-paced training to help identify when people's emotions are changing and what it could likely mean in the context of the situation based on reading their facial expressions and nonverbal behavior in real time. You can read their blogs, access their research, sample their training. Everything you need is there. And while you're there, enter the code INCOHESIVE25 for 25% off of all of their best-in-class online training. Please, for the professional interviewers, head over to certifiedinterviewer.com. That's where you can learn more about the International Association of Interviewers, their educational catalog, both online and in person, their interviewer resources, legal resources, networking resources, forms, and so forth, their opportunities to look for jobs, everything that you need to find out there, all of their training, certifiedinterviewer.com. And that is also where you can learn more about the Certified Forensic Interviewer designation. What does it take to qualify? What does it take to pass and maintain the exam? And what could that mean for your career moving forward? Please check it out, certifiedinterviewer.com. And while you're online, please head over to INCOHESIVE.com. That's where you can learn more about the programs that our clients ask us to customize and facilitate for their senior leaders, business development teams, and HR teams, to teach them the skills, perspectives, and techniques necessary to obtain the everyday confession in a wide range of conversations. So you can see all the details about those programs and more over at INCOHESIVE.com. I appreciate you all taking the time to be here today. Thank you so much for coming back again. And now, without further ado, I introduce to you Sarah Downing. Good morning, Sarah. It is so great to see you again. Thank you very much for taking the time to be here.
Well, thanks so much for inviting me. I'm excited for our conversation.
I am too. And over the years, we've had conversations before. We're certainly not strangers. But whether it be at like association events or meetings here in town, you have so many different roles and you do so many different things that I'm really excited to honestly pick your brain, because as we look at exploring communication and how people perceive and receive our messages and how we can better communicate them, I feel like you've got a wide array of experience and perspectives to dive into.
Absolutely. I'm excited to share.
Cool. So let's do it. So I took a look before we jumped on at some of the articles that you've contributed to. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I saw that captivated my attention was you talking about finding your own voice. And I certainly don't want to speak for you, but for those of you people that might have skipped through the intro, you're a leader in the construction industry. So finding your voice could have meant many things at different stages of your career. So to the degree that you'd like to dive in, can you please walk us through, I guess it's a double barrel question, the process that you used to find your voice and how others can apply that to their roles as well?
Sure. You know, 20 years in the industry, I can't say that, you know, in the beginning, I had the confidence to have a voice. It was very much a sit back and listen and gain as much knowledge as I could. But as I became, you know, more confident in myself and my abilities, that's really where I was able to find my voice. And once I did that, I started to see my career grow. I started to see, you know, my impact on the businesses that I was in, you know, start to flourish. And a lot of that has to do with being curious. If you are curious about the industry that you're in, you're not afraid to ask questions, you know, you start to pick up more and understand more about what you do, you know, and a lot of that comes from listening. You ask the question and then you sit back and you listen to what the answer is and you ask follow-up questions to that until you gain understanding. And that really gives you the confidence moving forward to find your voice. And it's not easy being a female in a male-dominated industry to have a voice. You know, I laugh and I say a lot of times I may know the answer, but I need to sit back and let all the guys at the table go ahead and beat their chests and put their answers, you know, out and pontificate a little bit. And then I can join the conversation after we've gotten through all of that. So I think, you know, some of it is, I don't want to say know your place because that seems like a very derogatory, you know, derogatory term, but knowing when is the opportunity for you to speak where you add most value.
I love all of that. You had me in follow-up questions for curious. You had me in follow-up questions for asking questions. But where I'm going to start is talking about letting, the way that you described it was letting the guys in the room beat their chest first, even though you know the answers. For me, and I think this ties back into confidence. So this is where I'm going to try to go first, if I can make it make sense. When I'm in a room full of people who are talking, debating, sharing ideas, solving problems, whatever, if I'm fortunate enough to be in a role where I just get to do lots of observation, for me, often the people in the room who are the most confident aren't the ones that need to speak first.
That's right.
They're not the ones that need to get their ideas out. They're not the one that needs to make sure they're heard. They're the ones that are confident enough in their experience, ideas, and answers that everyone else can get off to the races. Mm-hmm. And if they get to the right answer without me having to contribute it, then good for them. I got what I wanted. And they feel better about it and everybody wins. But if they don't, then we can use what we heard from them in order to steer it in the right direction. So yes, I can imagine, I can't speak to this, that their gender roles can play perspective in that. But I think that's a great rule to live by in all kinds of conversations, regardless of age, gender, whatever, that are participating there. So as you talked about building your confidence through asking questions, which I loved, and we'll come back to that. How did you develop the confidence to sit quietly, even when you know you have the right answer? Because I think that's something that the highest levels of leaders struggle with mightily.
I mean, it's not easy. It's really hard to sit back and just wait. But I think, again, it's the experience of write it down on your notebook or your piece of paper so that it's out. You know, you've gotten it out of your brain. You've now put down on a piece of paper what it is that you want to say, what your point is. But I think it's just realizing that if you know, waiting for that right moment, that your voice is heard. If you're just adding to the noise and chaos that's happening, you know, in the meeting now on Zoom calls, which I think are the worst to have, you know, full blown meetings on.
Sure.
You know, it's pausing and waiting for the opportunities. They will come along, as you say. They may pass by you, and that is perfectly fine. I've left meetings where I haven't said a word. I might have taken a lot of notes. I might have had a lot of observations. You know, so it's figuring out where you can interject, where you add value. And sometimes it is helping to, you know, lead that meeting and redirect people to the point that you're trying to get to and the objective of the meeting, because we've all been in those places that suddenly it gets derailed because somebody brings up something and you know, we're now talking about football. And, you know, sometimes your time to speak is bringing it back around.
All great points. I had one of those meetings this morning, by the way, right before we jumped on. We started talking about one thing. One person offers an idea, and 7.5 minutes later, it's like, okay, can we come back, circle, please, over here? Thank you. But to everything that you just said, I feel like, and I love your thoughts on this, the perception can be that if I don't talk or if I don't contribute, people will think that I'm weak, or people will think that I'm not smart, or people will think that I don't have the answer. When in many, many cases, the person with the most strength is the one who's not, to quote you so perfectly, adding to the noise. Because while everybody's playing that ladder game, scrambling to the top of the ladder, if you're already sitting on the roof, because you know where this is going, you sit there and wait for people to come to you. Mm-hmm. And if they figure it out while they're on the ladder, then great. You didn't have to get involved in the fray and you got the outcome you wanted anyway.
Right.
But now when people gas themselves out, when they're exasperated, when they're looking for that help or that answer, because you've been observing and taking notes the whole time, now it can be, you know what, Johnny, I think I heard this earlier. And Sally, I'm pretty sure I picked up on. And Bill, a couple minutes ago, I heard. And to tie all of those three together, bam.
Right.
Now, they're all the heroes, but the only reason why you could do that is because you were listening the whole time instead of fighting your way into the conversation.
Exactly, exactly. And, you know, I forget the exact quote, and I forget who said it, so I'm sure I need to do some quick Googling. But, you know, it was don't worry about feeling stupid because you could open your mouth and prove everyone right. And so that's really, you know, that's really something of, you know, if you want to contribute, make sure you know your stuff. Maybe you're sitting there in silence with your computer and you're doing some quick, you know, reconnaissance work on what the conversation is, or you're, you know, looking up some additional details. So when you do open your mouth, there is something intelligent and helpful and valuable that comes out of it. Because really, you know, and I'm going to go back to a lot of the times I'm the only female at the table in the room. And so I think right, wrong, or indifferent, I have to work that much harder for what comes, you know, what I'm going to say and what I'm going to bring forward to be that much more valuable. I could lose credibility extremely quickly if, you know, I just completely wasn't paying attention and said the wrong thing.
Let me quickly highlight the obvious, hopefully the obvious, of how unfortunate and unnecessary that thought process should be. So let me
100%.
Let me get that out there really quick. To circle back to what you just said, I'm going to probably make an assumption or an assumption and a half here, and I'd love for you to correct me. When we find ourselves in that situation for any reason, so like I can't obviously speak to being a woman at the table, but there's times in my career where I could certainly speak to being the youngest at the table or the newest at the table, or the one person who's not from this industry at the table. I still run into that one all the time. So those are certainly not the same, but could be in the same family.
Sure, absolutely.
From an emotional perspective. So when we're sitting there, it can be easy to let fear guide us. Because I'm the one that's different, I don't want to. Or it can be easy to, not easy, I guess the shift would be let the outcome guide us. Here is what I'm looking to achieve. So how do I achieve that outcome? And one of the things I've absolutely loved hearing from you in the first 5 minutes we've been talking is everything appears to be outcome focused. Like the recognition of, I'm going to quote one of my former supervisors who I used to make fun of for saying this, the downside. You're aware of the downside or the potential observation of the challenges, perception, excuse me, or challenges, but you're really outcome focused with how you strategize and approach the situation. Was there ever a point in time where you felt that mental shift from fear to outcome? Or was that something that you just sort of kind of work through as part of your career progression?
Oh, I didn't say that there are a lot of times that I am scared to death to walk into meetings and have conversations or, you know, lead a presentation. I mean, that I don't think that goes away, right? I mean, there's just always that unknown factor of, who you're talking to, you know, oh gosh, do I know my stuff? What happens? So I think, you know, it's gotten better. I've become more accustomed to kind of, you know, squashing that and not letting those negative thoughts come in of, oh, I'm not good enough. I shouldn't be here. You know, all of those things, when they start to emerge, kind of, you know, tell myself, of course, like, you were invited to this meeting, you know your stuff, you know, get over yourself. I think sometimes we just have to get over ourselves and put ourselves out there. I do a lot of prep. I rarely go into situations where I, you know, haven't researched the people. I haven't, you know, LinkedIn is a great way to get a lot of information in kind of a non-creepy kind of way, because it's out there, you know, but I make sure that I'm comfortable with the people. And, you know, honestly, it's kind of the tried and true. Like, I make sure that I'm, you know, dressed for the part. So it's finding the, you know, outfit that I'm super comfortable in, or that I feel like, you know, I don't know, portrays the vision that I'm looking for. Because those little things, they go a long way, you know, and make the difference in how you show up to the meetings.
Again, I couldn't agree more. I'm going to have to work hard to find something to disagree on, maybe, as we go through this conversation. But I couldn't agree more. And at the expense, I don't want to trivialize or take away from what you're saying, but it's true for guys too.
Sure, absolutely.
Like, there's plenty of times where I'm like, wait a minute, is this the right shirt for this meeting? Or should I be in a suit, or should I do jeans and a sport coat? And should I, like, what's the right way to show up? All of those things, they certainly can matter much more for women in many different environments than men. Let me acknowledge that right away.
Sure.
But it's across the board. And your point about getting over ourselves, one of the things that I had to be taught, and it took me a long time to realize it, especially when I was younger, was about, like, being called into the meeting. Like, they called you to this meeting for a reason.
Right.
Was there has to be one thing that I am more knowledgeable of, more experienced with, more perceptive of, more control of than everybody else. So maybe the other person has the title, the money, the car, the house, the whatever, whatever, whatever. Okay, fine. But there's a reason why I'm here. Mm-hmm. And there's one thing that I've got that they don't. And so if I can just focus on that, then that helps me overcome the rest of the, you know, why did they call the former interrogator into this conversation? It really doesn't fit. It does, but I just need to find that one piece.
Right. Well, and I think too, I had a great career coach, because, again, like, you know, I need help still. I have a lot of coaches that I work with and mentors that I talk to regularly, but they said a really great thing kind of about the fear and the nervousness and that imposter syndrome that we, you know, that we talk about. And, you know, they said, we go into meetings and we're looking from our insides at everybody's outsides, right? So you walk into a meeting and you're like, oh gosh, like, they look so polished and they have, you know, they have the right cup of coffee, and they have, you know, oh, they brought their iPad. Should I have brought my iPad? You know, I mean, you start doing this comparison thing, but we're looking at them from the nervousness of our insides, at their polished outsides. We have no idea what their insides are doing. And then are they looking at us and saying, oh gosh, you know, she wore a really great necklace today. She must be kick-ass.
It's a great point. It's a great point. You've written about mentorship before. Mm-hmm. So let's take a quick detour here. You talked about being curious. You talked about asking questions, and all of that files back into mentors. I get the feeling, I don't know this, but seeking out mentors has been a practice of yours for a long time. It's not something new. So if we get in the Wayback Machine just for a minute, for people that might have thought about it, but either are too nervous or don't know how or don't know where, when you were new in your industry, how did you initially start seeking out mentors in order to continue to build and grow and develop yourself?
Sure. So I think one of the easiest ways was through our professional organization. So the architecture, engineering, and construction industry, has a really great active organization of marketing and business development professionals. And so I quickly joined that organization and, you know, started to meet people. And, you know, you find the more seasoned people in the room. I say that because now I'm the more seasoned person in the room. But you look for, you know, you look for the ones that have a lot more experience, and you start a conversation, invite them to coffee, invite them to lunch, ask questions. You know, I mean, we have in the marketing world, you know, we have to respond to requests for proposals. And sometimes you get questions on those that just make no sense. And so it was great to have, you know, resources that I could reach out to and ask those questions. It didn't start as an official, will you be my mentor, yes or no kind of conversation. It really grew organically just from conversations and asking questions and using them as a resource. And they've changed throughout my career. As I moved into more leadership roles, I found that the mentors that I, you know, was seeking out and started talking to were in higher level leadership roles. And so from kind of the execution conversations, that it moved more towards leadership skills and finding your voice and getting that seat at the table. So I think for those that are looking for a mentor, there are a lot of us seasoned professionals out there that love to help the next generation and love to have people ask questions and for us to impart knowledge of what, you know, what we've learned. And so it's just taking that first step and, you know, grab a cup of coffee or shoot an email over asking questions.
Or like you said before, just putting yourself out there.
That's right.
But it's also taking the responsibility for it. There are plenty of people that are out there and would love to help, but we have to take the responsibility to make that initial step in order to engage with folks.
Well, I was just going to add, a lot of professional organizations have formal mentor-mentee programs. If you are so kind of, you know, nervous about stepping out there and you know, don't know or aren't a part of an organization, you know, there are formal where they pair you up. But again, to your point, it really is the responsibility of that mentee to keep the conversation and keep that alive. You know, the mentor is volunteering their time and wants to support you, but it really is the responsibility, I think, of the mentee to really continue to move that conversation along.
Yeah, and thank you for illustrating that and reminding me of probably a few good mentor relationships I've let slide because I didn't want to bother them, or I knew they were busy, or to your point, maybe they've got more important people that they're taking care of than me. So I have absolutely been the mentee who lacked the responsibility to keep the relationship going.
So it's time to follow up. Make some.
I'll make that note. Thank you for holding me accountable. I appreciate that. Another question I'd love to ask, just based on what you just said, was talking about at one point you were seeking out the more experienced people in the room, or seasoned, I believe was mm-hmm. the word.
Yes, yes.
And now you are the more seasoned person in the room. And I think there's lots of different ways to look at it. Like the person that used to be one of the group and now has to manage the group, and that's one transition. Or the person that was a peer and now has more of a leadership role, whether that's formal or in some of the organizations. So how did your mindset start to shift when you realized that you were in that transfer zone of becoming one of the more seasoned people and had some of the responsibilities that came along with that?
Yeah, so I think that's, I feel like that's one of the harder things, you know, for individuals. And, you know, I think if you ask any CEO or top leaders, you know, it's pretty lonely at the top. There's not, you know, you don't have an expansive peer group and friends in the office and all of that that you have whenever, you know, you first start your career and as you move up. And I think that's been, you know, kind of the hardest, that you're friendly with everyone, But you do have to realize that, you know, your words matter. They impact people very differently whenever you're responsible, you know, for hiring or firing or salary adjustments, anything like that. You really have to be careful and calculated is not the right word, but you just have to be very careful of what your, you know, what your demeanor is, the words that you use, how you speak to people, because, you know, it can wreck a culture really quickly if you're saying the wrong thing or acting the wrong way. And, you know, so it's in all sense, you have to just be very, very mindful of that. And it's hard because, you know, I want to be friends with the ladies in the office. They're, you know, quite a few of us. They're really great. I want to sit down and have lunch with them. But when I do, I know the conversation is very different than when I'm not sitting at the table having lunch with them. And that's fine. I realize kind of the role that I have, and I have to be okay with that.
And you just nailed it. That has nothing to do with Sarah the person.
Absolutely, right.
It has everything to do with your job title.
Exactly.
So you put any other person in your job title and the same thing happens. You take your job title away, you sit at the table, right, and it changes. So it has zero to do with you, but it's still hard for people to kind of come to grips with that and make that adjustment.
Right. Well, and I think too, it's understanding, you know, who you can now go and speak, you know, and talk to. What, you know, complain about, oh, this is happening at work. I can't, you know, I can't even deal today. Well, that's a very different conversation with the person, you know, my direct report than it is with the leadership team here in the office.
Yeah.
I probably shouldn't go and have, you know, the bitch fest with.
Complaints go up, not down.
That's
complaints
right. Exactly.
I'm going to screw the quote up, but there's a scene in Saving Private Ryan, a movie from the 90s, I think, right? So if people haven't seen it by now, it's not my fault that I'm ruining this.
Right, yeah.
I've had plenty of time. It's on every cable TV station, if you still have TV. But they're like walking through a field, and somebody previously asked Tom Hanks, the leader character, how come he doesn't complain? And he had a very like political answer for it. Sure. But then later on, they're marching through this field, and one of the guys is complaining up to him. And so Tom Hanks turns around, he's like, listen, this is how you complain. He kind of illustrates that. But yeah, and that is, you know, it's very easy, and it can be almost tempting and comfortable to join the fray, kind of join the
exactly.
noise you were talking about earlier, but rising above that. And earlier, I don't think calculated is a bad word. And maybe I'm on an island with this one. It's the intentions with which you're calculating that make it good or bad. So if the calculation is I'm a leader in this organization, or even I'm a new leader in this organization, or I'm a leader that's new to this group, and I need to recognize that how my demeanor, my word choice, how I act, all these things, they're gonna have a really big impact. So I don't have to be inauthentic. I don't have to be fake. I don't have to make stuff up. I'm not gonna lie to anybody,
right,
but I can still be calculated with how I show myself, because the calculation is towards the greater goal of creating
right.
the organizational culture to drive the success we're all committed to. If the goal is to take advantage of everybody so I can make them miserable and get promoted fast, well, then that kind of calculated.
Sure. Exactly.
But it's the intention behind the calculating.
Right.
That really makes a difference. As you noticed yourself becoming more seasoned and becoming the person who people were reaching out to be a mentor. So now the shoes were starting to flip a little bit. You know, there's one group that I spent a lot of time with, and I started filling in as a coach just because we needed it.
Mm-hmm.
I'd been there about the longest at that point. So, you know, next man up, here you go.
Right.
And then people started calling me coach. I'm like, you guys know that I'm just filling in, right? But then over time, where that role became more consistent, I was able to kind of accept it and internalize it. Now, for the most part, I'm okay with it in most situations, not all, I guess. But so as you found yourself getting into that role of being the one who other people were seeking out to be the mentor, how did you make that shift in order to realize that you had the value in the time and to some degree the responsibility to help others get through the path that you got through?
Yeah, I think so. For me, and again, going back to the industry that I'm in, there is no formal program at any university, at any community college that teaches professional services marketing. So we all land at this industry with various backgrounds. We don't know what we're doing. Shoot, I just gave away the secret, but
I'll edit it out.
No, we have no idea, you know, what we're doing. It's all new. And so we're having to navigate it. We're having to find those mentors. We're having to ask those questions. And I think for me, what I continue to want to be are those people that guided me through those early days. So I feel like it's my responsibility to give back, to honor the people that gave to me. And so, you know, that's really, I look at it as a responsibility of being a seasoned professional. I also, you know, I learn a lot from the people, you know, the younger group that I talk to, just because they're doing really cool things. You know, I mean, social media wasn't a big thing whenever I first started in the industry. And so I had to learn, but now some, you know, some of the graduates are coming out with social media degrees, right? So they know a lot more. And so a lot of the relationship that we have is both of us listening and learning from one another. And I think that's really where the magic happens, is when I'm gaining more information and insight from the person, you know, that I'm mentoring, than vice versa. But it's kind of a personal, you know, a personal mission for me just to give back, you know, similar to those people that invested their time for me.
Well, it's awesome. And it's certainly the right perspective to have, one that I wish everybody would adopt. Conversation for another day. As you talk about that, I feel like that loops back to something that you said in the very beginning, which was the power of curiosity and really staying curious and asking questions, and more importantly, asking follow-up questions. I guess from an outside perspective, it's a little bit easier to see how somebody could maintain that curiosity early in their career, because there's just so much to learn. I came from outside the industry. I've got to catch up quick. It fascinates me. I'm passionate about it. I want to learn. But at some point, that bell curve starts to flatten out, right? There's only so much more to learn, and we have to work harder to learn it, because we could probably skate by with what we've already learned for a good portion of what we do. So how do you work to keep that curious mindset when it would be so easy to graduate past it?
So everyone doesn't need to go to this extreme, but in October, I started graduate school.
Congratulations.
So, thank you. So, you know, my curiosity, just in order to continue to feed that, I went to the extreme to get my master's degree. But again, not everybody has to go there. I don't think that it's something that you necessarily learn. I feel like you either are or you aren't curious. You know, curiosity for me, I think, started at an early age. You know, I mean, you have a young child. Why? Right? Like, that is one of the first words that we learn. And for parents, it's the one that we hate the most, because we just want to say, because it is.
Yeah.
Right.
Because I told you, damn
because
it.
I told you. But that curiosity aids in learning. And so, again, I graduated with a communications degree, thought I was going to do something completely different. I landed with a civil engineering and landscape architecture firm. I had to look up what landscape architecture was, because I was like, there's no way I'm going to go work for a landscaper, right? So I would see these drawings. I would talk about these projects. I didn't know some of the words. I didn't know how to read drawings. So I would ask a project manager, explain this to me. I keep writing about this. What does that mean? How does that impact this? And so it's amazing when you start asking questions, especially to the professionals that don't often have people curious about what they do. They love to teach and to explain and to make sure that you understand. One of my favorite things now to do is put on a hard hat and boots and go out onto our job sites and talk to the superintendents and ask why. You know, I am now that annoying five-year-old. Well, why are we doing it this way? Well, what is that? Why is that doing that? But the whole time, I'm just absorbing this knowledge. Will I ever use it? I have no idea. But you know what? Like, I've shown interest. It shows that I care. And it continues to build that rapport. And who knows? One of these days, like, I may be able to throw out some kind of something, you know, and impress people by what I learned.
And it'll feel like a random moment when it happens, but it will make all the difference in the world in whatever meeting you're in. When you throw out that one line, that one understanding, that one term that nobody in marketing should be familiar with. And now all of a sudden everybody in the room is like, damn, this girl knows her stuff.
Right. Right.
And now that one word, I've seen it happen time and time again. When I used to be in investigations and I would get called to do interrogations for companies, whatever, it's fraud, it's theft, it's violence, it's harassment, discrimination, whatever's going on. And I start asking them questions about this person's business role. And they're looking at me, that has nothing to do with the investigation. You're right. Right. But it might have everything to do with this person thinking I know something I don't. Mm-hmm. So at some point in the conversation, when I can look at them and say, oh yeah, that reminds me, bam. Now all of a sudden they're like, oh, he does know. No, I don't. That was the one word I had.
That was the one thing that I knew.
And I hope I used it at the right time in the right way, because that's it. There's no more bullets in that magazine. But it helps out so much. And I imagine for your writing and for your marketing, like, understanding the backstory makes it easier to tell the cover story.
Absolutely. And, you know, especially with managing the brand of, you know, of an organization, when we post things on social media, you know, we have to sound smart for ourselves, but for this larger enterprise, you know, that we're a part of and representing. And so we need to understand what we do. And if we don't understand, we need to ask those questions. So, I mean, that's like my favorite thing, really, is asking questions and just continuing to learn our process, continuing to learn how we can, you know, how we do things. I mean, building and construction is an amazing industry that there are so many pieces and parts. I will never know all there is to know about it, but that's what makes it really fun.
Yeah, it's something different every day.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And I do have to laugh because you mentioned the kids asking why. I feel like the toughest but most important job I have as a parent is not to kill my son's curiosity. Mm-hmm. Like, how I respond to this wicked annoying 17th question I've been asked in the last 5 seconds could stop him from asking a more important question later. So it's like, I'm putting up with this now because I'm investing in being the person that he comes to later on. We had a cute moment a couple weekends ago. My son is still quite young, where we were cleaning his room and he leaned over and just kind of very sheepishly whispered to me, which was out of character for him. He asked me if a specific word was a curse word.
Oh, yeah. It
was. It was a good one. So now I've got to, like, quickly go through. Don't laugh. Like, don't get angry.
Oh, I mean, right.
I'm not angry anyway, right? But don't get angry. Don't laugh. Like, how you immediately react is going to change the next time he decides to ask you a question, because now he's so vulnerable. Once I got through that moment, then it was, okay, don't tell him how you really think about the word. How does a six-year-old need to start comprehending this? But, like, those moments are the moments that set up the next time he has to ask me a really important question about a potentially, like, dangerous or crazy or emotional or whatever thing.
Sure.
And I feel like the same is true in our business relationships. If somebody comes to us with a question and we're like, what are you, stupid? We talked about that last week. Or go look that up. Or it's in the X Drive. Or if you look at our marketing material, you'll find it on page 9. Like, all we're doing is demotivating them to come back and ask the really important question at the really important time when all the chips are on the table.
Right.
And if we don't look at it that way, we're creating future problems that are going to be much harder to solve.
Well, and I would add too, in being in leadership roles, no matter the industry, you know, people are going to come to you with questions, but not every question is one that you should be answering and solving. Sometimes it's, you know, asking questions of them because you know they know the answer.
Mm-hmm.
Some things that people come to you, they don't know the answer and you, you know, need to point them in the right direction and help them out. But a lot of times whenever people, you know, come into my office to ask a question, they know the answer. They're just wanting, you know, that second opinion or to see if the answer was right. And so I think it's really important as you are growing people that you are helping them solve problems themselves and not solving the problems for them.
I love it. I love it. Kind of a hard segue, but I want to go back to ask something that I forgot earlier. You talked about managing the organization's brand.
Mm-hmm.
If there is something I know absolutely nothing about, it is representing, constructing, communicating brands. So I'd like to bring this down to the personal level first. You talked a little bit about getting into an industry that you really had no experience in or didn't know anything about.
Yeah, don't tell any of my first bosses that I had no idea what I was doing. Don't.
But now here you are. A leader in the industry, a voice on multiple platforms, in print and in interviews, facilitating presentations, organizing events, and that's all outside your own organization that you're a leader in as well. So what steps did you take to consciously build your brand as you were growing your career with your sales and marketing background?
Sure. So I think in any industry, you know, your reputation is all that you have. I mean, you can have experience and you can have, you know, amazing degrees and credentials and all of that. But if you're horrible to work with or, you know, just...
What are you trying to say?
Right? Or if you, you know, are known that you, you know, are kind of a shyster or, you know, you're always out for yourself and that means putting other people down or throwing people under the bus. I feel like your reputation precedes you. And so, you know, I think it goes back to what I said earlier about being a mentor is I've just really tried to be helpful, you know, realizing that people want to do business that they like, that are helpful, that are genuine. And so I've just really tried to be all of those things. I have not necessarily sought out that I'm, you know, in an article or, you know, a lot of those things just kind of have come organically. And I think that's just because I meet people, I'm helping people. Your reputation is it, you know, I mean, that's the only thing that sticks with me. I may, you know, I've changed companies throughout my career, you know, those shirts are in Goodwill or those brands, you know, I'm no longer a part of, but I'm still me no matter which organization I'm with.
I love that line. I'm still me no matter which organization I'm with. So earlier you mentioned, I'll say kids, I don't mean that pejoratively, coming out of college with social media degrees. For me, I feel like social media is an electric fence. Sometimes I have to touch it.
Sure.
But most of the time, I would just rather give it a wide berth. With what you do, you have to be so involved with it all the time. What advice, let's take this two levels. We'll go people, then organizations.
Sure.
What advice do you have for individuals to credibly build their reputation on social media?
I think it's being very careful with conversations that you join. Recent news, Twitter changing to X, there have been, you know, questionable conversations around that. You know, we've had a very pointed conversation of, is that a platform that we should be on? You know, people are still on it. There's conversations still having, you know, still happening, but there's some controversy around it. So I think just being really cognizant about where you're showing up. I think also, you know, people can see what you like, who you follow. And that's not to say, you know, that you have to be somebody that you're not. But if you're trying to build a brand and your reputation, just being really careful that, you know, you're kind of not going too far one way or too far another way, or, you know, really putting yourself out there. I think going back to what I said earlier about being in a leadership role and kind of having that, you know, guarded communication and calculated, it goes to social media. When it's out there, it's out there. And so if you have posted your, you know, drunk Friday party, you know,
you saw that
Friday night, right? Michael, we need to have this conversation.
Yeah.
You know, those are just things that you have to be really mindful of. My personal social media is well, aside from LinkedIn, but like Instagram is a private account. It's a private account because I want to post pictures of my house. I want to post pictures of my kid. I have, you know, I could have an open Instagram where I can do industry things. So I think it's just figuring out what you're comfortable with, but then realizing that, you know, on these platforms, I represent myself, but especially on LinkedIn, underneath my name, you know, it says marketing at Clancy and Thays Construction. I'm representing my company. So I just have to be very mindful, you know, of what goes out.
All good points. Even from a professional standpoint. So if we just focus on people who are posting things that are that good or bad would be objectively looked at as professional.
Sure.
Are there best practices or what are the best practices for posting professionally in professional brand building? I can't even say the words. That's how bad I am at it. Professionally brand building on social media versus, I don't know if it's just content for the sake of content or the wrong content or whatever it is. How have you seen people within the professional guardrails be the most successful?
You know, I think so much of it is showing yourself. People want to work with people that they feel are relatable. So being relatable and being helpful. You know, if you're posting pictures and talking about yourself all the time, people are going to lose interest. So, you know, in order for us to get engagement and for people to really want to look at what we're posting, it's making sure that we're telling a story, making sure that it's helpful information, you know, showing our people, showing our personality. Some of our biggest, you know, hits and engagement on social media have been when we show our employees and we talk about the fun that we have, you know, here, or the philanthropy that we're working in and the volunteering that we're doing. Those get way more interaction than, you know, hey, here's this latest project that we've done.
Awesome. You know, I was just asking for a friend. Mm-hmm. So yeah. We can talk offline.
We can help you.
I said that we're do two levels, personal and organizational. I imagine a lot of the same rules for the organization apply to the personal, even the examples that you just gave, showing the philanthropy and the people in the organization. Are there any other, from an organizational level, any other top considerations, or does that all essentially flow through?
I think it essentially flows through. You know, I mean, our social media, we make sure that it hits a few different eyes. So it's never an initial, you know, one person's looked at it post. I mean, we're making sure that it's hit different levels of the organization, just so we can ensure that messaging is on brand and where we want to be.
Cool. So I also know that you give presentations.
I do, yes.
And one of the things that I'm always fascinated with is how people communicate something that is extremely familiar to them to a group that aren't so familiar with it. So I would love to ask you, when you look at all your experience, all your expertise, your passion for what you do, when you have to present it to a group that either isn't as experienced or foreign, you know, maybe you're talking to somebody within your organization and marketing just isn't what they do at all. How do you focus on crafting and delivering messages so other people will understand what is second nature for you?
Sure. So I think, you know, you start with the large 2-page outline of everything that you want to cover. And then you realize that you have to baby step it down. So you may not be able to cover all of the things. You know, getting rid of jargon is probably the biggest, you know, I was just coaching a presentation team on that the other day. We were going to go in front of a building committee. And we don't know if the building committee has experience with construction or not. And so using the jargon that is second nature to us, we had to break it down and make it, you know, more simple. With that, though, you don't want to come across as talking down to the people that you're speaking to. You know, so it's that fine balance of, you know, making sure that you've taken the jargon out, or the jargon that you do need to put in there just because it is important, that you're explaining that and explaining it in a way, you know, using plain language. There are a lot of things and processes, you know, that we have acronyms. I mean, you could have a whole notebook full of acronyms. But I'll go back to being curious. You have to ask what those acronyms mean, not just assuming that you that you know what they are. But yeah, whenever I give presentations, I think it's baby step, you know, and maybe give them the half presentation that you thought you were going to be giving, just because you have to slow it down a little bit to ensure people understand. I've also found that, and I love doing more Q&A presentations. So a lot of times I have an hour and I'll present for 20 to 30 minutes. And then I get so much more out of the Q&A. And I feel like it's a much more organic conversation. And so really, whenever I'm doing presentations, I like for it to be more on the Q&A side than actual, you know, presenting.
Awesome. Which, for the record, circles back to the confidence topic we were talking about earlier. Because to put yourself in front of a room full of people that you may or may not know and say, I'm going to spend 30 minutes answering questions that they may or may not ask, and we'll see how this goes. So another shout out to the confidence that you very clearly built with how you go about so many of the things we've talked about. Dropping jargon and acronyms is so important. If we had to list like all the ways we accidentally make people feel stupid and disengage audiences, jargon and acronyms would be at the top of the list, especially when they're so familiar to us. It's unintentional, but we end up talking like you're at a conference table in your own office, as opposed to realizing there's an outside audience. So even like, it's funny to be in the position I am now, because I don't recall doing extremely well in any English class I ever took. But even like writing it out before you use the acronym, if you were writing, doing the same thing when we talk. Mm-hmm. So if I just said CFI, well, what is that? You a certified flight instructor or certified fire investigator? Like, I could come up with some that aren't family friendly.
Right.
but if I say, you know, as a certified forensic interviewer or CFI for short, now I can use CFI for the rest of the conversation. Everybody knows what it is. So even if, to your point, if there's one that I have to use, if I can explain it first in a way that isn't, for those of you that might not be aware.
Right.
Like, make it a joke, keep it light, move forward. Now you've got permission to use it.
Well, and, you know, again, our conversations so often, you know, I mean, the specific topic that we were talking about was constructability reviews. If I say constructability review, right? I mean, you may vaguely have an idea of what that may be. But by saying it and then slowing down and explaining what that is, I feel like it helps clarify it for the audience, but then it also clarifies it for the speaker, right? I mean, you kind of question, you're like, okay, well, what do we mean by constructability reviews? And you get like blank stares and you're like, oh, you've just been using that word, but you really don't know what the what the process
is. You sounded so smart for a second.
Yes. So, 100%. I mean, drop the jargon or explain it.
Yeah. Even speaking in outcomes, like I'm going to make this up because I don't know what a constructability review is, but if it's some sort of analysis as to what is the real potential of completing this project the way it's been designed on this piece of property.
You did really well.
Yes. Then say that. Like, right. Don't say, so we're here today to talk about the constructability analysis. It's thank you all for taking a half an hour to get together and really talk through how actionable building this specific design on this specific plot of land is for everybody involved considering our budget. Not everyone's going, oh, that makes total sense.
Right. Now I know what we're doing. Now
and
I
it
have,
can still say constructability assessment on the cover.
Great.
But now everybody knows what they're doing. Those Q&A sessions that you like to run, some people love them. Some people avoid them with a 1,000-foot pole if they can get one. What techniques do you use in order, I guess I'll ask it a couple of ways. The first one, what techniques do you use to really keep yourself calm and focused in some of those uncertain moments when you hand the proverbial microphone to the audience?
Well, first, it's listening. I have been guilty of asking for questions and then somebody is asking a question, but I have like blanked out for some reason at that point. And so not really fully understanding their question. So I think it's even more important that you're present and that you're listening to what the individuals have to say. I also think that it's important just to be honest. If you don't know the answer, or if the answer that you have is a little shady, I've opened it up to the audience and said, does anybody else have another suggestion? You know, can we build on this? Can we kind of aggregate the answer out of the experience that we have in the room? Again, it makes for a really dynamic conversation. I learned something out of it, but I also am a real person. I don't know the answers to everything. I haven't, you know, there are definitely things that I, you know, haven't encountered in business and in my career that somebody else may have better experience with.
I love that. Before I give my answer, with us, you've got a room full of experts. What do you guys do?
Right.
Please give me a good answer. Please give me a good answer. I've absolutely been there. Sometimes when we do the Q&As, you get that individual in the room that for whatever reason feels the need to be the smartest, the coolest, the loudest, the most challenged, whatever. Do you have a technique or approach or a mindset that helps you deal with that individual should you encounter them during a Q&A session?
You know, I think sometimes if they seem to be the ones that want to continue the dialogue and we're not leaving it open for other people, you know, I think it's inviting them for more conversation afterwards and kind of removing that situation, saying, seems like you have a lot of questions. I would love to chat with you afterwards. You know, let's continue the conversation with others. Thankfully, I'm not presenting and having conversations that I think add a lot of like controversy. So thankfully, I haven't had kind of those crazy heated conversations. You know, but I think, again, it's like you would do in a meeting. It's redirecting the conversation. You know, and a lot of times people just want to be heard. So you have to, sometimes you just have to let them go for a minute.
Yeah. And then they feel like they've got it all out of their system. And now you can move on.
Right. And I'm okay if, you know, somebody in the audience wants to feel like the smartest person in the room or wants to, you know, disagree with some of the points that I've made. That's fine. Right. I mean, it happens. We're not all here to agree. But, you know, I'm the one standing at the front of the room. So,
yeah, which means ultimately you're the one that has control of how we segue out of this.
True.
I might be out of control of how we got here, but I am the one that's in control of the next step that we take. So to your point of, I don't have to get the last word. Oftentimes it can be death by last word. I don't need to get the last word. They can have their point. I can accept it. Maybe I even validate part of it in order to get them to be quiet just long enough for me to get to the other place I really want to be right now instead of where I am at the moment. So all fantastic techniques. That was a lot. I wasn't sure we'd be able to get through so much. You do so many different things. I took a page and a half of notes while you were talking. I really appreciate it. For everyone that was listening and for any one of the things that you spoke about, finding your voice, a woman leader dominating in a male-dominated field, being a mentor, finding mentors, asking questions, being curious. For people that want to follow up with you to either learn more or engage with you, where should they go in order to connect with you?
Yeah, so you can absolutely connect with me on LinkedIn. Send me a note. Let me know that you heard the podcast, had questions, want to grab coffee. I'm happy to continue the conversation with anybody that's interested.
I appreciate it. And I'll vouch because we've had several coffee conversations
previously.
Yes. So I'll certainly vouch for that. Sarah, this was fantastic. I really appreciate you taking the time. Thank you for diving in and talking about so many different topics with us today. I really, really appreciate it.
Well, thank you for having me. This was a really fun way to spend a morning.
Awesome. Well, my pleasure. And I look forward to seeing you hopefully at another event around town soon.
Sounds good.
Sarah, thank you so much for such a wonderful conversation. I truly appreciate you sharing your time, being so open, so honest, and sharing so many experiences with us. Thank you. So many great takeaways and things to consider. I really loved your approach of sitting quietly and patiently and letting other people share their ideas and answer questions, even and especially when we already know the right answer. I love that one. And I was really struck by the concept of trying to keep in mind that we are viewing people from our insides to their outsides. We can't see what they look and feel like on the inside. And we don't know how they are perceiving our outside. And that is so important to keep in mind. And of course, the idea of allowing people or helping people to solve their own problems as opposed to solving their problems for them being so important. Thank you, Sarah. All tremendous ideas. I really appreciate the conversation. And thank you to everybody that took the time to listen to the conversation and learn from Sarah and her experiences today. I really appreciate you all being with us. Thank you. And of course, before we go, we want to thank our sponsors one more time on the way out the door. HumanTel. Head over to humantel.com and enter the code INQUASIVE25 for 25% off of their online best-in-class training for developing the skill set of identifying what people are likely thinking and feeling at any moment in time based on evaluating their changes in their nonverbal behavior and facial expressions. I recommend it. I've done it all myself. It's over at humantel.com. For the interviewers, please head over to certifiedinterviewer.com, where you can experience all of the resources that they offer for professional interviewers, from legal resources to online training to in-person training to networking events to job boards and so much more. It's all there. And while you're there, where you can learn more about the Certified Forensic Interviewer designation. What does it take to earn the designation, maintain the designation, and then what that can mean for your career as well. All of that and more at certifiedinterviewer.com. And while you're online, please head over to inquasive.com. And that's where you can learn more about the customized engagements our clients ask us to facilitate for their senior leaders, sales teams, and HR teams to teach them how to encourage people to share sensitive information under vulnerable circumstances in the face of consequences by applying strategic and ethical observation and persuasion techniques. All that information and more over there at inquasive.com. Once again, thank you all so much. We really appreciate you being here every week, listening to all of these conversations. Thank you. Before you go, please like the show, share the show, subscribe to the show so you can see when the next one drops. Certainly tell your friends about it. And please leave us feedback so we know more about what you would like to hear and listen to, and maybe less of what you would like to hear and listen to, so we can make sure we're delivering what you want to listen to and learn from. Thank you again very much. Stay, take care. Stay safe and take care of each other. Thank you very much.